Wednesday, February the 10th, Lyndon worked in bed on the telephone. In a conversation with George, I heard a good summary of what he's trying to do. I suppose he meant for George to give it as a sort of background or summary to newsmen. Or maybe George just needs to know it himself. He said, "We are trying to cut off the barnacles off of this government. You can't run a veterans hospital. It's gotten down to 60 beds and is an out-of-the-way town where you can't get the specialist you need. But every time I cut one out, I get hell from the congressman, and I'm going to get hell cutting out the fourth-class post offices and the mail carriers. I've cut foreign aid down from 4.9 to 3.3. I spent the morning reading my beautification material and talking with Liz Carpenter and Secretary Udall about the agenda for the meeting. Sometime in the morning, there was more ominous news from Vietnam, an attack on barracks. In the afternoon, I had a lengthy and unproductive staff meeting with Liz, Bess, and Christine Stugard. Nobody's fault but mine. I'm simply not clicking. Lyndon had no lunch. I sent him over a bowl of soup just as insurance, about 3:15, and he did not come home for a nap. Late in the afternoon, feeling the walls closing in on me, I went walking around the south grounds with him. About 6:00, cars began to drive in, and I recognized the members of the Security Council and Senate leaders, Buzz Wheeler, McNamara, McCone. I went upstairs and greeted them in the yellow room. Lyndon had told me he would be over in a minute. He is remaining curiously calm, but I know it must be at a price. I had a wonderful talk with Lucy, who is distraught because the paper said yesterday that Georgetown was her first choice, and she thinks they've been so good to her at Marquette, not even cashing her check that accompanied her application because they didn't want it to become a matter of public knowledge that she was applying. She composed the most wonderfully understanding letter to the father who heads the school that I wanted to hire her to handle my correspondence, and I know his opinion of her will rise. She gave me one of her long sermons, including her analysis of my relations with Linda. She thinks Linda is too dependent on us, but the silver cord binds her too tightly, that she never should have left the University of Texas, where she was about to achieve a certain sort of independence. Who knows? Having her here for this whole year has been the greatest joy to me and her father, and must have meant something to her intellectually, socially, as an experience, as a most unique part of growing up. But I'm really glad that she's made her decision to return to the university in September. I emerged from my analysis session with Lucy to find the guest departed and Mac George Bundy lingering with Lyndon. He asked him to call Mary and stay for dinner. I'm always delighted at any hour spent with them. He's one of the brightest men I've ever met. I suppose what I'm really looking for Linda to marry is a 25-year-old Mac George Bundy. Lyndon gave a word picture of George's unhappy relation with the carnivorous press. He said he's like a country dog. If he runs, they'll eat him up. And if he stands still, they'll mess him up. Mac and Mary and I enjoyed immensely his colorful descriptions of many on the public scene today. But always there is weight and burden, an almost tangible experience